Everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing, represented by PPV.com. Uncrowned Yahoo Sports. Chris Algier is on vacation in the Florida Keys, living it up, sending me a lot of photos. Looks like he's having a great time, but fear not. We have to bring you the boxing news, and I brought my guy, Najee Grampus of Cigar Talk. Najee, hello, my friend. We tried to do this a few weeks ago, guys, and we had a epic technology failure. It was a great podcast, and I think we'll do another great one here today, reacting to a big night of fights and some news. Najee, what's up, my man?
Yo, Dan, what's up, my man? Yo, listen, I blame Verizon for our missed episode, bro. That was terrible. We had a great episode, a little bit of technical difficulties. But listen, we're here. Great night of boxing. I want to salute your, you know, your co-host as well, Chris. He's probably somewhere with his feet in the sand, living it up. But man, happy to be here, bro.
Yeah, man. It was a great weekend of fights. We have some news to get to. Obviously, this Keyshawn Davis news. No longer will be fighting Devin Haney. That fight was, we thought was going to be made for about a day or two before that blew up with Keyshawn Davis declining the $2.13 million. We'll get to that. A big night of fights over on DAZN. Another TNT rollout. We saw William Zepeda with one of the best performances of the year. Absolutely blitzes, steamrolls Lamont Roach in this one. Unanimous decision win. Scores of 117, 111, 118, 110. It was that type of fight. I think the judges got it right. There was open scoring in this one, but there was no controversy because after the fourth round, it was somewhat close. After the eighth round, we kind of saw what was happening here. And by the 11th and 12th round, it was a formality that William Zepeda was going to get his hand raised and become the newest WBC lightweight champion. Belt to ass. Kids like to say it was just a beatdown. I mean, and Roach kind of had no excuses afterwards. But man, William Zepeda, we've seen him do this before. He had the hiccup with Shakur Stevenson, which was a good performance from him, but just not enough. Just shows you how good Shakur is. Unreal performance from William Zepeda in this one to get his hand raised. Just man, it was great.
Man, yeah, listen, this dude, William Zepeda. When they say buzzsaw, like, this is the prototype. This is the guy that means buzzsaw. He's coming nonstop. What, he threw 900 punches, I think, in the fight? Or it was, like, high 800-something?
850.
Like, dude, it's just hard to deal with that level of volume. Like, straight up, right? Like, a guy like Lamont Roach, who is not known to be an outside fighter, right? Like, his best range is mid-range and inside. And if you're going to be at the mid-range and inside, you have to have the special weave abilities that we saw Shakur Stevenson have to even try to evade a lot of those punches. I think Lamont did a really good job, you know, the first 4 to 5 rounds doing that, landing some counter shots. But ultimately, listen, the guy's gas tank mixed with throwing all of these angles, this guy's shooting from everywhere. It's hard to see when the shots are busting from every angle. So listen, I mean, Zepeda's a hard, he's a guy at 135 that needs, like, you know, he means something to the division. He's like one of the guys that I feel like this fight has stamped him as. He is a big power player at 135. How did you see it?
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. It's hard to disagree. It's hard not to sing his praises today. It was that type of one-sided beatdown. And Roach afterwards, got to give him a lot of credit for taking these fights. This is his third straight, like, main event, third straight big-time fight. We'll take on all comers. And afterwards, no excuses, said to Chris Mannix, you know what, like, I thought he was a one-trick pony, but he actually used his feet in this fight. He stepped back was able to deliver some shots. He got out of range. I wasn't able to counter because he stepped out of the pocket, William Zepeda. So to me, that says that he went back to the drawing board after the Shakur Stevenson loss and got better and improved and got a title shot. Yes, we're seeing this in boxing a lot now, coming off of a loss, getting a title shot. But it's not like the most egregious title shot we've ever seen. And he, like, William Zepeda was a championship. Right, he's a championship-level fighter. So I loved what I saw from Zepeda in terms of making the adjustments and learning from the Shakur fight. He even said that in the post-fight interview where, you know, Shakur is just too good. Like, I just tip my cap to him and you know, take that loss on the chin. He threw 884 punches. I didn't want to shortchange him
884, okay.
Not 850. He outlanded Roach by 60-plus punches. By the ninth round, Lamont Roach had already absorbed a career high in punches landed on him in the ninth round. And Roach has had a long career. But I mean, that was unbelievable stuff from Cepeda. And absolutely, you take a look at 135. He is definitely a major player. He's got the WBC strap. It's a fun division with a lot of turnover now. We'll get to that in just a second. But, you know, you have guys like Abdullah Mason that were in the crowd. I think that would be an unreal fight. I don't want to get too far ahead yet, but I just want to talk about what Cepeda did in that ring last night in terms of just the volume. Like, you just don't see that in boxing that often anymore. Guys throw in the 40s and 50s now. That's become commonplace. So when you see a guy averaging 70-plus at the championship level and not lowering that number, like, I picked Roach to win. So did Algieri. Like, we kind of slept a little bit on Cepeda, and I...
Hey, I got you guys there. I picked Cepeda on that one.
Okay. Good for you. That's great. Yeah. That's a good pick by you. Like, I feel like a lot of people were sleeping on Cepeda.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. A lot of people did sleep on him. And I guess I understand why. I feel like when you're doing the homework, everybody sort of compared the Tevin Farmer fight. But the one thing I saw was Tevin Farmer's range is a lot different than Lamont's. I think Tevin Farmer fought on the outside with the long jab. So every time Cepeda was trying to come in, Tevin's either using lateral movement, moving his feet. Lamont doesn't really, not that he can't, he doesn't really like to move his feet that much. Lamont is more like a stationary plotter. He'll kind of plod and trot forward and trot backwards, but he doesn't really move his feet. So I had a feeling just at the range and utilizing the feet, Tevin made it look a bit easier than I think it really is. But I agree with you, Dan. Listen, I want to see the fight. I want to see when Tank comes back and gets it together. I want to see Tank and Cepeda, man. I feel like that is a barn burner. That's one of those ones, like, those contrasting styles put together. That's one of the ones we need, man.
We're talking Tank already. We're 8 minutes into the pod. We're talking Tank. It's hard to, like, I love Tank Davis. I don't know. I know you guys have your beef. I don't know if Tank is on Team Cigar Talk, but it's hard to put Tank in any of these equations because he hasn't fought in 17 months, but he's so damn good and he's still relevant because I see people were tweeting me last night like, oh, Tank, let's throw Tank into the mix here, 135. Like, he's not fighting this year. I think that's been established. Like, you know, Al told that to Haney, Bill Haney. He's not fighting this year. But I do love, like, that's the thing with Cepeda is when you have a fighter like Cepeda who throws 80, 90 punches around, styles make fights. We know this. Like, he brings his style to the table here. So therefore, he's going to make really fun fights with Abdullah Mason, who's also has a similar style, doesn't throw as many punches, but goes for the knockout as a come forward fighter. You throw in like a Murataya, if he does stay at 135, has a different type of style that would make for a great fight with William Cepeda. And you have Lucas Body and you have Floyd Schofield fighting for what we think will be the WBA title at some point this year. Also, good mix of styles there too. That's what you get with Cepeda when you have someone that throws 80, 90 punches around. It's an absolute force. Is you're going to have some really intriguing dance partners. I agree. Tank probably is the best one. We just don't know. He's just a question mark. Like, I wish he was active, like, because boxing is better when Tank Davis is in the game.
Yeah, it's definitely a question mark. It is questionable. I guess I only say that because the contrast is the guy that throws the most punches versus the guy that throws the least punches, right? Yeah. Like, literally, statistically, that's where we are in the division. Tank is one of the lowest outputs, but because of his power and extreme accuracy, he's been able to get you out. So that, like, you know, that contrast right there, I feel like creates one of those type of fights that's like, man, I need to see that. The blacks, the Mexicans, you know how that go every time. Is, you know what I'm saying? Every time that crowd gets together.
Yeah, we need that. We need that. Tank, it's one of the craziest stats in boxing. Tank throws the least amount of punches, second least amount of punches when he was active, only a Big Bang Chang, and had a 93% knockout rate.
That's insane.
When I told it to Tank, like, blew his mind. Like, he didn't even know that. Like, that's absolutely crazy. But yeah, Cepeda went in there and did the damn thing. We had the open scoring, which did not become an issue in this fight. After the fourth round, it was 38-38 twice, and then 39-37, which I think was pretty on the mark. Like, Roach had success early because he was pot-shotting, and it took a little bit for Cepeda to get his engine going. Like, he threw where Cepeda didn't warm up until like the third round. So those first couple rounds, we saw Roach use that distance, pot shot, get in and out, was landing clean, hard shots. And then Cepeda just took over. And then he was getting out of range, which was the number one thing. Like, when you brought this up beautifully, and so did Algieri last week. Like, people think of Roach as like some master boxer, like he's going to use his feet, he's going to get, no, he's a guy that will stay in range. And I think he stood in range way too long. Like, I think he was way too stationary. At times he was up against the ropes where he just allowed for Zepeda to just go off. And even if Zepeda wasn't landing everything, he's giving that illusion to the judges. You know, 5, 6, 7 punch combinations. Are you kidding? I just think it was just too much. I think that simply was it. Like, I tweeted out after the fight, like, he just beat his ass. Like, that's the analysis. Like, there was just, you didn't have to be a boxing expert to watch that fight and just be like, Zepeda just overwhelmed Roach to the point where Roach had no answers.
Now, where do you see
we're going right to Tank here. I understand he is going to be brought up a lot in these discussions. He is Tank Davis, but we're going on 17 months without Tank in the ring. Al Heyman told Bill Haney that he's not going to be fighting this year. But I understand, like, why Tank's name will come up. Like, he did not lose his belt inside of the ring, had to draw with Lamont Roach, and he is Tank Davis. He is a ferocious puncher, and styles make fights. You see a guy like William Zepeda who throws 70, 80 punches around, you want to put him in there with someone that is a hard puncher and will try to test the chin of Zepeda. So I get that. I understand the Tank talk, but I just don't know what he is. He's such a question mark. Like, I want to see Tank fight because I think boxing is better when he's involved in the sport. It's just like, it's hard to put him in that discussion. I do think there are other great fights to be made at 135 with William Zepeda, and it's a division that's like ever changing between him and Mason sitting atop, because I think Muay is going to be gone. So yeah, I understand the Tank. I understand Tank, but I just have to, like, we have to figure out what Tank, if he even wants to fight anymore.
Well, listen, Dan, you're right. But if anyone is the guy that's going to make you figure out if you still want this, it's William Zepeda, right? We're going to figure out if Tank Davis gets in the ring with William Zepeda, he's either going to be the Tank that we know, or it's going to show that you ain't that guy anymore. William Zepeda is that type of guy, that amount of pressure and ferociousness nonstop, round after round, round after round. It's just, he's a guy that forces you to have to make a decision, right? Like, am I going to stand here and fight this guy and throw the leather to make him stop coming? Or am I just going to try to backpedal, right? Like, he's a guy that I just feel like that style and those comparisons between those two, Tank and Zepeda, man, that makes for a great fight. But let me ask you, Dan, where do you now have Zepeda as far as the hierarchy at 135? Like, is this guy, is he the guy? Like, where do you see him in your hierarchy?
Like, are we keeping Murataya in the discussion?
Yeah, let's just keep him in for sake of argument.
Well, it's just, it comes down to like what you prefer. I think a lot of fans like William Zepeda's style. And I think they like seeing a guy that's going to come in there and come forward, throw caution to the wind, throw a lot of punches. And he has been tested before. Like, the Farmer wins were good. Yes, Farmer got blown out by Schofield. That was like shocking to see. It just comes down to Mason. Like, what do you think of Abdullah Mason right now? He was a little green in that fight, his last fight. Why am I drawing a blank on who he fought in his last fight?
He just fought Albert
I wanted
Bell.
To say Robert Easter for some reason.
Albert yeah, right.
He kind of looks
tall,
like
long, yeah. tall and long. Just, you know what I mean?
And I just saw Robert Easter on AB's stream. Yeah, so it comes down to Abdullah Mason and Zepeda right now. And I have Muay up there as well. That's the thing, is like they're all like good, but like no one is the clear cut top dog at 135. You're taking Tank out of the discussion, and you're also taking Shakur out of the discussion, whose last fight was at 140. And we don't know where he's going to campaign. I would say it's neck and neck between, I don't even know, dude. It's a three-headed monster right now, but Muay is gone. Muay is leaving that division. So it's Mason and Zepeda. Mason and Zepeda is just an absolute shootout. I got
That's
people in my mentions telling me that we can't do that yet. We can't do that yet for Abdullah. But dude, Abdullah's got a belt. Like, he's got a target on his back. Like, you can't have a development while you're a champ.
You're right, man. I agree with that. He's in a precarious position because, again, the kid is only, 21 years old, right? Like, he's not close to me his prime, both mentally and physically. But at the same time, like you said, when you are a belt holder, this is what comes with it. So I would like to see that fight. I do think that he probably would be best served with another fight or two under his belt before he takes that unification. However, his fight with Sam Noakes is great preparation for Zepeda. I mean, listen, the guys don't necessarily fight alike. Sam Noakes isn't throwing, like, you know, 100 punches around, but that boy can crack. Sam Noakes was throwing leather, and that was a real dog fight. And I think that that was the first time we got to see Abdullah, and Abdullah got to see himself and understand if it gets rough and rugged in them trenches, I'm a dog that's going to bite back. And he's going to need that against William Zepeda for sure.
Oh, for sure. I couldn't agree with you more about how Zepeda fights. He takes the fight out of you. Like, you could see Roach, like, fourth round on. Like, the fight was just taken out of him. It was simple analysis. You don't have to be a boxing expert to know, to see what you, in that what happened in that fight. He legitimately just overwhelmed Roach to the point where he took the fight right out of him. And, like, you're right. When you bring up Tank, who has had questions about whether how long he wants to stay in this game, like, just questions about being in this game. Like, I'd be shocked if Tank would take such a fight right away because it's a tough night in the office. Like, it was, sure we're talking about a guy. It just takes the fight right out of you. So I don't know. Like I want to say Mason's ready for that type of thing because he has a title, but you just never know. And Top Rank is phenomenal when it comes to developing fighters, bringing them along. Best in the business for sure. So they are in a precarious position with Abdullah Mesa. It kind of reminds me of Munguia years and years ago when he burst onto the scene, won a title at 154, and was still considered a prospect, even though I think Mason is better than Munguia was at that time. But it's almost like he was learning on the fly, Munguia, while being a champion, to the point where he relinquished belts, to the point where, you know, he lost, and then he almost went backwards a little bit. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Mason, but you have to be very careful with him. But if you look at – if Mason wants to take, like, a voluntary defense, like, you still have the Cardina fight. I don't know if Cardina can come over to the States. You have Alan Chavs, who is a beast who can just punch. Zepeda's ranked third. You have Noakes, who he already fought. Albert Bell's sixth, who he already beat too. And then you're getting into, like, past champs. So I don't know where Mason will go next. I don't know where Zepeda will go next either. I guess maybe look to that Lucas Body and Floyd Schofield fight that's going to happen. But that's
– yeah,
we don't even know when that's actually going to happen. That's another good one that was ordered. Purse bid was actually ordered for that one over the weekend. Lucas Body and Floyd Schofield in the mix.
Yeah, that's a good fight. I mean, I like that unification. Listen, if I'm Abdullah's handlers, I wait a couple of fights, man. Zepeda is no joke. Just to get your guy acclimated again, he's still young. He's a new champion. Get a couple other wins under your belt before going at a guy like Zepeda. Not to say that he can't win, but again, tough night at the office for anybody.
Yeah, well, champions right now, 135.
I do want to salute Panda also, though, because Panda has done a great job of preparing Zepeda to be, and like you said earlier, Lamont said this, I think people have the notion that he's solely a come-forward Mexican with no skills. We saw skills. He's taking angles. He's using the jab. He's doing half step backs and trying to counter. I got to salute Coach Panda for what we saw as far as the skills are concerned from a brawler like William Zepeda.
100%. And we see this often in boxing. Fighters get pigeonholed. And you see a guy that throws 80 punches, you think he's a Rock'em Sock'em, Rocky type, like with caution to the wind, no defense, no real skills. Give me a break. You have to have supreme skills to use angles like that, to step out of the pocket, step in, know when to step in and out. Like Roach couldn't find him. I think that's another thing too, is like obviously he's getting battered 70, 80 punches around. And then on top of it, when Roach is like, all right, let me get back to my quick counter rights, my chopping left hands, he's nowhere to be found, Zepeda, because he's stepping out with supreme footwork, and you have the God-given abilities in that motor. I want to see a drug test. I'm just going to say it right now. I want to see a drug test because we've seen this time and time again, like where guys are have unbelievable motors. I know there was probably drug testing in this one. I'm not for sure, but like... I thought of that like midway through the fight because they were like, how can he do this? You know, Grisham's going on and on like, this is unbelievable. How does he have such a motor? He's barely like, it's the eighth or ninth round and he looks like it's the first round. Not saying he's on PEDs, but there is a PED problem in the sport. I want it to be clean. Like, I want to believe what I saw was clean, but it does. Yeah. I did creep into my mind. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, I'm not mad at that take. I think looking at Zepeda, he's been consistent to me. It didn't feel like this kind of popped out of nowhere, like right. his stamina. I feel like I've been watching him for the last few years, and he's kind of always looked like this. So unless there's like, you know, unless there's some good masking agents going on, I don't know. I think this guy, it feels legit. I hope it's legit. But listen, I'm impressed with William Zepeda, man. And this was his arrival moment as a world champion to say, listen, that was Shakur Stevenson, and the rest of y'all ain't him.
Yeah, I tweeted that out. How good is Shakur Stevenson?
Yeah.
Because Shakur Stevenson did not allow William Zepeda to land anything. I went back and looked at the stats. Like Zepeda threw a lot of punches in that fight against Shakur. He just wasn't as accurate. He wasn't landing like he did on Roach. And the thing with Shakur is Shakur was like 50% of his total punches against Zepeda. He stood there in the like you're talking about that, like you have to have that supreme like dodging in and out. Like Roach didn't have that. Like Roach didn't have that at all. I was kind of shocked by that. But Shakur has that in spades, and he's the best. I think he's the best boxer in the game today.
I would agree, man. I mean, I think, and you know, that fight specifically, we saw Shakur fight a different fight than generally he does, right? Not to say he's a runner or a mover, but we see him like to circle the ring, keep the distance. Like in that fight, he was in the pocket, right? Like he stood in the pocket. He countered off the ropes. He was at the ropes a lot. It reminds me of that movie. You remember that movie Limitless, where the guy takes the pill and it makes
I just watched that the other day.
Yo, dude, that's what it's like. You could he's like seeing everything in slow motion, and I don't know. I guess it's like a gift, or I don't know what it is. But again, is he has the ability to still be able to be in the pocket and evade punches by this much, and it's just I don't know. It's just different.
So you're saying Shakur's on the Limitless pills. He's on PEDs.
We got to test him for Limitless.
Yeah, that movie is amazing. The reason I watched it because Bill Simmons did his top 50 rewatchable movies of like the last like 20 years. And he had Limitless like way at the top of the list. And I was like, hey, what phenomenon. Yeah. Had to go back and watch. Great movie. Great movie. But yeah, Shakur, there are levels. There's levels to boxing. And the triangle theory doesn't always work. I don't always subscribe to it. But this is a individual sport where it's a one-on-one sport. Because I had people tweeting at me left and right. It's like, you can't give Shakur credit because Zepeda didn't fight Shakur the same way he fought Roach. I could see where you're coming from but why don't you think Zepeda fought that? Because Shakur, number one, took it away from him. And also, Zepeda learned from the Shakur fight, I can't just do the same thing over and over. I have to use angles. Maybe I don't throw 1,000 punches, I throw 850. So I kind of come at you with a different type of artillery in there. So yeah, the triangle theory doesn't always work in boxing, but you can take a look at like, oh my God, look how Shakur handled Zepeda and made him look like a puppy dog in their fight. Yeah, it was close-ish. That's another thing too. It's like 7-5, 8-4. No, that fight wasn't close if you go and watch it. It's just that Zepeda did better than we thought, and he did better than a lot of previous Shakur opponents. Probably the best performance against Shakur. That's how we're judging Shakur. That's how good he is. It's like we're looking at like almost like moral victories.
Sure. And I think that's, you know, I think that's fair for a guy that hardly ever loses rounds to be in a fight where maybe you lost 4 rounds, maybe 3. Like, it's like, oh, wow, this guy did amazing because he actually won a couple of rounds, you know? So I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing like a rematch down the road. Like if Zepeda keeps, like say Zepeda goes in and just cleans out 135. Like he beats Abdullah, which would be unreal. Like he beats the winner of Schofield and Body. He takes on Voluntary. And they would have to see each other again. Like we would have to see that. But as for now, like Shakur is on another level. That's fine. William Zepeda did his thing in there. It shows if you lose a fight, it's not the end of the world. Go back to the drawing board. Figure it out. Get better. Same thing for Roach, too. I'm not about to write Lamont Roach off. I still want to see him in some big fights. He just came up short. And I want to ask you this. Like, do you think – I asked this to Algieri last week, and he said not really – but, like, do you think moving, like, 130 he fought at, then 140, 135, his last fight was at 140 with Pitbull, now it's at 135. He looked a little sluggish in there. I understand he didn't look good because Zepeda took it out of him, but I just felt like he was a little bit slower in the ring on Saturday night.
Maybe a little bit. I can see where you're coming from. I do think that Zepeda is just a guy that depletes you, man. He's going to take it out of you.
Zepeda took the fight from him, number one. First and foremost,
Zepeda, he started off good. I think he started off at that. But again, that relentless pressure. And, you know, one of your guys I got to shout out, Paulie Malignaggi. He always likes to talk about...
Don't say that. Don't put that on me. He's a friend of a friend.
I'm from Queens, but the Brooklyn
You just say
guy,
because I'm Italian, you just think I'm friends with Paulie Malignaggi?
No, I feel like you guys have done stuff. I feel like I've seen you guys do things before.
We've worked together with MVP. He's an Algerian, him do pro box, but it's fine.
Yeah, I know him and Algeria do pro box, but I feel like I thought I saw you guys do something before. But anyway, like I just feel like Paulie, like he likes to say mental pressure, right? You know, just the feet, the hands, and that starts to weigh on you round after round. So like you said earlier, Dan, I just think that he took the fight out of Lamont. He took the stamina out of Lamont. Like, I do think that Lamont fighting against Tank, he has the luxury of being able to rest. Tank is a guy that doesn't throw, you know, all of these punches. He's trying to set up so I can sit here and think and be in my comfort zone and counter when I need to, and I could rest when I need to. And I think that, to me, is why he looked a lot different.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things. Like, you try to diagnose a loss, and, like, what did the loser do wrong? Like, for Roach, first and foremost, Zepeda's took the fight out of him. But you got to think about attrition here. You got to think about the three fights, different weight classes. He broke his hand in the Pitbull fight. I'm not making excuses for Roach, but you just try to figure out what went wrong for him. Like, he just didn't have it. He got taken out of him. But I do still want to see him fight at 135, like, or even at 140 too. Like, he'll still be around. It's just rough, the boxing business, because he should have won that Tank fight. So he's the champion. I always talk about this on here, like the what ifs of boxing, because it's one night. Like, so many things can change, the domino effect. Like, if Roach had gotten his hand raised against Tank, he's the money man. He's the champ at 135. But from there, he has a draw. He has to go into that Pitbull fight, another draw. Doesn't get the title there, or the interim title. Now he has a chance to fight for the WBC title. Had to deal with everything he did in the last couple of fights. Understand, got paid handsomely for that, and runs into a buzzsaw that is William Cepeda. So in those three fights, zero wins for Lamont Roach. Yeah, he made a lot of money and got his name up there and built a better profile for himself, but no wins. That's absolutely nuts.
That is crazy when you think about it like that. I know that's what happened, but it sounds crazy when you say it like that. But he's got to get in the win column. I don't know where it's at, 35, 40. Take one of those guys that you could just get back in the win column before going back into one of those big fights, man. Just get back in the win column first.
100%. He'll rebuild. He's got a good team. So shout out to Lamont Roach. Good dude as well. Champions 135. Got Cepeda, WBC, Muay Thai, IBF. That's going to become vacant because Muay Thai has said he's going up to 140 unless there's like a huge fight. And none of these are like crazy big fights. Abdullah Mason is the WBO champion. We just talked about him. And then we got this Schofield body purse bid. Hopefully we get that in the next couple of months. So it's a fun weight class. It's always been one of the best weight classes in boxing. And now we have like the resurgence of Cepeda. Mason's a phenom and some good bit players in there. Like, Schofield's a hard puncher. Crazy ass dad. Dude needs to just stop tweeting.
Yeah,
with AI crazy. Now we got AI training montages.
And he tweets on his son's account too. So it's like, it's just kind of weird, but yeah.
Bro, I don't know if you ever interviewed them. You ever have a run in with them?
Yeah. I've interviewed those guys a few times.
Yeah. I sat down with them before the Farmer fight for MVP. It's definitely like interesting. Like, I want Floyd Jr. to be free. I want him to say what he wants to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just keep it like that.
Yeah.
I think we all can see it. Listen, boxing's father and son. I'm not about to step in the way between a father and son and their bond and trying to make money and navigate this crazy sport that is boxing. But that is some strange stuff coming from that Twitter.
I agree. I mean, listen, it seems like that's the remo. They get it. We don't get it, but they get it. So, you know, I guess more power to you. I just want to see these fights. So hopefully him and Lucas Body, we can get that and Abdullah Mason
crack,
unification.
Bro. Body yeah, can crack.
He put Sylvia in the graveyard, man. That was bad. Body can definitely crack. So that's a good fight. I like that.
I've been around him quite a bit with MVP. He can definitely hit hard, and he's been chomping at the bit to fight Schofield, because this fight has been, with Tank being out of the picture, this fight has been brewing for a while with the purse bids and all that, which we'll get to in a second. All right, speaking of Raymond Murataya, he won the co-main event against Robson Conceição. It was a meh type of fight. I kind of thought it would be that. Like, Conceição, like, we've seen this guy on the world stage or the top title fights numerous times now over the years. Like, I was surprised that Murataya would even fight Conceição. I'm surprised Conceição got this fight. But as we know with Murataya, he's in like a transition here. Like, we know that he's not long for 135, didn't want to kind of risk it. Takes a solid pro in Conceição. Murataya gets the win. There was really wasn't a single moment from this fight. Like, I almost was flipping back to the Yankee game, putting and had my eye on the Murataya fight as well. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of knew this going in, and then it played out how we thought. Now Murataya should go to 140, where he doesn't have to deal with the IBF rehydration clause. I think that played a huge role
in
this fight, with him looking a little sluggish and not having that game-changing power. And I think Bradley had a great point, too. It's like, he said, like, Murataya is a knockout puncher, yes, but when's the last time he got a knockout? Like, I think he was killing himself to get to 135 and then killing himself the next day with this 10-day rehydration clause, which I think is one of the dumbest rules in all of boxing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it definitely wasn't the most entertaining fight. Robeson Conceição is always in fights like that. I think that's his MO. I think he's a fighter with a style that makes it just, you know, not entertaining. He's going to muck it up. He'll stay in. He'll clinch you. He does those things, right? We've seen him do that in both those Shockey Foster fights. We've seen it multiple times over with Conceição. Even the Navarrete fight to a degree, you know, outside of those knockdowns early, you know, he kind of made it a stinky fight later as well. So I think that's Conceição's MO. But Murataya did what he needed to do. Clearly, like you said, the weight was playing a factor. You can see the size was – like, you can see the size difference already in both guys, right? Like, Murataya is definitely a bigger 135-pounder. So I'm not mad at him going to 140. And I like that he took accountability for his performance. I think that was the first thing he said on the mic was, how did you like your performance? You know what? I didn't like it. This wasn't a good performance. And, you know, I like the accountability. So, I don't know. 140 is kind of getting a little hot now, man. A lot of things happening at 40.
Yeah, you got Gary Antoine Russell, champion WBC, correct?
Yeah.
You got Poilo versus Dalton Smith, winner.
Yep. There's you got Isak Cruz names. There.
Isak. I mean, is Shakur
there? I like
there?
Tito Mercado. Shakur's still there. Tito Mercado. I like that guy.
Emiliano?
You know, it's a couple names, man. We got some upcoming names.
Adam
in that
Azim,
division.
Sandor Martin, the spoiler. Super Matias, I'm not like going to write him off 100%. Like, he's still like going to be in fun fights. Mercado is a name you got to keep an eye on. Just signed with Salida. He's a good fighter. Poilo and Dalton Smith are fighting in October. That was been delayed at 140.
Even the Japanese guy, Hirioka, that fought. He's good. I like him too.
Who came off of like an all night flight, red eye, worst travel ever, and still a really good fight. Where are you putting Keyshawn? Is Keyshawn? I know we'll get to him in a second, and he's like, we're just gonna destroy him in like a couple minutes here. But like, you put him at 140, you put him at 147.
I'm just waiting for the topic so we can like this.
Yeah, we'll get
this,
to it. Man, you just get to all it right. Now.
No, I mean, let me just get it. 140, 147. I mean, this guy, he's got to make up his mind. He's got to make up his mind. What do you want to do? What do you want to do? Is it 40? Is it 47? Is it big fights? Is it not?
What do you want to do with your life?
Yeah, I think it's time to sit down and have a real talk conversation with yourself. What do you want to do? And I think that filters all the way. Obviously, we're going to talk about it, but even down to the weight class, right? He missed weight in the last fight. So it's, again, what do you want to do? I don't know where he is. I'm not sure he knows where he is, but he needs to figure it out because he is an elite talent, but he has to figure these things out, man.
Yeah, same thing with Shakur. I'm just talking about the weight. Shakur is pretty knows where he is, but that's a whole different story.
I had Shakur on live yesterday, on the live stream. He pulled up yesterday. He says, I'm still a 135-pounder. According to him, just, in his mind, man, that's what he said.
He's fine. I mean, you could campaign at both. It's perfect because you can find the best opportunities. We'll see there. Charles Conwell, TKO 9. Paul Kroll, like Conwell a lot, had the hiccup in his last fight, but up until then, he was banging on the door for a title shot. Still think he's top 10 talent at 154 towards the back. What I want to see here from Conwell is, will they put him in there with Virgil? And I understand, like, Conwell, it would be speeding up the process for him, but you might never get an opportunity like that. Like Virgil, I don't think is getting right into that boots fight. I think that is not going to happen right away. So Virgil's going to look for, I wouldn't even say a tune-up fight because Conmel is not a tune-up fight, but you got to fight someone with a pulse and you got to fight someone in the top 10, I think, if you're Virgil Ortiz. You're ranked number two by the ring and you're looked at as one of the best. I want to say, I'm curious if they would make that type of fight. I'm curious if Conwell would accept it right now because he might not get that again. But I liked, first and foremost, I liked what I saw from him in the ring.
Yeah, I liked it too, man. Salute Charles Conwell. Bad news. I'm happy that he finally got back in the win column after his hiccup. And you could feel the relief from him, right? He was like, I'm back. He kept saying that. Like, I think he just felt the relief of finally getting back in the win column. I do agree with you, Dan. I do think that fight is possible. Virgil Ortiz and Charles Conwell. However, Charles, don't take that fight, bad news. That's bad news.
Bad
news. Bad news. Don't you take that fight. Listen, that's they're sending you to the slaughterhouse. Don't you take that fight. I'm telling you like this. Nah, listen, man. Come on, man. Virgil is coming in there. Virgil had a lot of animosity pent up from the Virgil. He's going to come out there like a raging bull, and you just came off another loss. That's going to drop your stock even further. I personally, if I'm Charles Conwell's people, I'm not taking that. I'll roll the dice and take my chances because I just think Virgil is going to come out as a madman possessed, and you don't want those problems. You don't want those problems.
So Virgil has been down before.
I mean, he has.
He's top three, 154. Hasn't fought in a while. I don't think it will happen next for a number of like the boxing reasons that we've seen over the years. But Conwell is at the back of the line again, unfortunately. Like he's down towards the bottom. Like they might offer, Golden Boy might offer a crazy number. He is signed with Golden Boy. And his team might say, all right, like you, like in anything in life, like you look at a number, everyone has a number. He looks at this number and says, do I take this now and fight Virgil and maybe clip him and maybe catch him? He's been out of the ring for a while. Then all of a sudden I'm right back at the top. Or do I fight for another two years plus, inch my way back up at 154, get an eliminator, you know, go through that whole process. So that's the big thing with boxing. That's what makes it a very intriguing sport, is because you have to make decisions like this. No schedule. Like, we're not looking at September 1st next week, week one of the NFL schedule, Conwell versus Virgil. No, you decide. You make a decision. So that's interesting to me. Like I'm curious what the conversations, if these conversations would happen with Virgil and a Conwell.
I mean, listen, I'm sure the conversations will happen, both being Golden Boy fighters. But listen, Dan, there was a game I used to play when I was a kid. It's called Chutes and Ladders. I don't know if you're familiar with this game, Chutes and Ladders. But there's like you roll the dice and sometimes you end up on a ladder and you could go up and skip the levels. And sometimes you end up on a chute and you go all the way down. Virgil is a chute. You will slide down the hill, man. It's not worth the risk.
He's vulnerable, though.
Is he?
Get him now. Get him now while he's vulnerable. Hasn't fought in like a year. Hasn't made the weight issues. I would favor Virgil. Don't get me wrong. I think he's top two. I have him above Fundora, Virgil Ortiz.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm not mad at that.
It's interchangeable, but I think Virgil's just slightly better than Fundora, and I have Boots number one. I think Boots will fight Josh Kelly.
I agree.
At the end of the year. I saw something that Kelly says is, hey, my nose is healing. Like they know. They want that paydays. Like, my nose was broken in a million pieces last week. I just want to let everyone know it's healing. And I will fight Boots, and I will get that big-time payday. So that's what I think is going to happen. Like, I think Virgil is going to be in the market for, I don't want to say tune-up fight, because it comes off, like, disrespectful to Conwell. Because Conwell is one fight removed from being, like, in title shots.
Yeah, but I agree.
Virgil's got to fight. Like, he's got to fight someone. He's got to fight someone in the top 10. Like, I do like the Madrimov fight, and I did like his fight with Boichuk. But, you know, you got boot. You got to do something, Virgil, to get the attention.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's true.
I agree.
Because he's got zero leverage right now in terms of the boots fight. And he's got no title, nothing. He's been out of the ring. So you got to do something. Get the attention.
Nah, totally. I agree. I mean, he definitely doesn't have the leverage. You got to take what you can get. I mean, for Virgil, Charles Conwell is ideal. For Charles Conwell,
I get it, yeah, from his standpoint. Like, I think he'd probably take it, but his team has to step in and kind of, you know, talk it out, guys. Talk it out over there in Ohio. Like the Commonwealth teams, got a good team. What else happened? Curiel, that was like a kind of a bad decision there, right? I wasn't fully tuned in. I was watching, flipping back and forth. Gifted a decision, just quitting Randall. Punch stats were close. I don't know why quitting Randall. Like I saw you tweet that. Like, this dude is the spoiler of spoilers. Like, no one ever looks good against quitting Randall.
Dude, I'm telling you now, listen, if I'm the manager again, that's another guy I'm not fighting. Quentin Randle, like he just knows how to make you look bad. The guy has the long jab. He's going to clinch. He's going to muck it up. He has a good IQ. Listen, Quentin Randle, he's done this to everybody. Everyone he's fought. Brian Norman. What's the other guy's name? I forget the other guy's name I'm thinking of, but he's fought a bunch of guys that are good fighters that he's just made look ordinary. And I mean, that's what he does. I don't know if I gave him the win per se. I think I maybe had Curiel by a round.
Everyone wants
but
to,
one judge
everyone
had 190
robbery.
Yeah, no, but one judge had it 190. I'm like, dude, what? Who is this? Who?
Patricia Morse Jarman. There's a horrible card. Like, that's the stuff that pisses me off. Is the blatant just wrong? No. That's clean shutout. Like, it was not that type of fight. Like,
that's
clean
insane.
Shutout was
I'm gonna
the main
do,
event. Or pretty damn close.
I'm going to find her on Instagram and or Twitter and do what the Twitter fans do to me. And like, that was terrible. Like, that was...
I'll do it. There's no way she's on Twitter.
Some recourse. Come on, man. That was terrible. That was bad.
I remember one time I was at in the lobby of a hotel, like on a fight week, maybe in Orlando or something. And I spotted a judge. And I was like, oh, you're the judge. And they got all, it was like, oh, he got all like, I was going to like attack him or something. Like they don't want to have that discourse. There's very few judges that, active judges that want to actually go through how they get to their scorecard. I think there's one retired judge now, forgot his name, but he was writing stuff for Boxing Scene. And I found it to be super interesting, like inside the mind of a judge. To get their thoughts. But yeah, 100 to 90, no. Close fight, yes. The Curiel blow weight and hard to take him serious, yes. All of the above. So that was the card. I thought it was really good. I thought in terms of TNT coverage, I thought the desk was better. I think the guys are getting to know each other a little more. They're a little more loose, as to be expected. Last month was their kind of first time working together. Crawford, I feel like, is getting his sea legs underneath him when it comes to, you know, being that guy and giving his opinions. And I think he's understanding, like, when he speaks, like, people listen and he's got a lot to say. But I just like the TNT coverage. Like, I like the fact that I put on my TV. I still have cable. I'm one of those weirdos. I still flip through the channels.
Dan, you in the cable. 90s, bro? You live in the 90s?
I just have it. I have everything. I write it off. But I just have, like, I have it. I have cable. I'm one of the very few that has it. But I just like the fact that I hit 551 on my remote. There's TNT. There's boxing. Hit the last button. There's the Yankee game. I like boxing being on cable. I like it. It makes, I understand it's old school, but I just like the fact that TNT is doing this. And there seems like the next one's going to be Andy Ruiz, which will be okay. But I think all in all, the TNT production, the pre-fight show, post-fight show, love that coverage. It just gives it an extra oomph that I feel like it's nice to have that as boxing fans.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. Listen, I think if we could get more eyes, I'm not mad at it. My only thing is, I watched it on DAZN. Mm. I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear anybody. Like,
I
heard they go to the
that
desk,
no one could hear.
Like, I'm like, dude, we can't hear anything. So I don't know, man. Got to get it together.
See, that's why you got to get cable. That's why you got to get the cable, baby. Yeah, no
Dan
problems.
Dan is a spokesman
on
for a Time Warner.
Come back to cable. Everyone's eventually going to migrate back to cable. That's how it's going to work. All right, let's get to it. Why the main event of this podcast, and you know where we're headed. Keyshawn Davis declines the fight with Devin Haney. Declines the $2.1 million purse. He wanted to net $5 million after expenses and fees, according to reports. In these reports, says the Top Rank offered Keyshawn Davis $3 million before the purse bid. Davis declined. Went to purse bid, probably knowing that he was going to get, or there was a chance that he was going to be below the $3 million. It ended up being below the $3 million at the $2.1. His previous high for a fight, purse-wise, was $1 million. Fans are not happy. I'm frustrated. I know you're frustrated. I don't understand Keyshawn Davis's thought process in this scenario. I get it. You have a value. Like, all fighters have value. All fighters believe they're what they're worth. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. I think he should have rolled the dice here. $2 million is a nice payday. Roll the dice. Try to beat Devin Haney. If you beat him, you're in the driver's seat. Even if you lose a close decision, you're in really good shape. But now, you're nothing. You don't have any fight. You don't have $2 million. You were, quote-unquote, gifted this opportunity by the WBO. You never fought at 147. You had two fights at 140. It's just a puzzling decision from Team Davis. And I don't like to use the word duck, but it's hard not to say that this was a duck.
Well, listen, I like to use the word duck. And that is the only word that suffices for what we just saw. That is the quintessential definition of ducking. Look, Keyshawn is an amazing talent. No one's denied that. I thought he actually had a good shot at being able to beat Devin the Dream Haney. However, there's a difference. Devin Haney is running to the smoke, and I got to give him and Bill credit for that. These guys are definitely willing to get in the ring with everybody. Now, like you said, I think Keyshawn made a bad business decision, which ironically is, you know, his nickname is the businessman, right? I don't know what happened with this, but it's puzzling for a few reasons. Number one, you got an offer for $3 million from Top Rank, right? These are the reports. You got a $3 million offer, and for whatever reason, you feel like you deserve more money. I'm not mad at that. Whatever rationale you want for making more money, cool. Okay. Now, here's what I don't understand. Right now, the landscape is different to where every single promoter that matters is a DAZN promoter. They're under the DAZN banner. That's Top Rank, that's Matchroom, that's Salida Promotions, that's PBC now. Everybody who's everybody is there, with the exception of Zuffa Boxing and MVP. I was fortunate enough to have Gustavo, president of the WBO, Gustavo Olivieri, on my show. He said that Zuffa is not allowed to bid because they didn't comply with the regulations of the WBO. So now that leaves Zuffa's out the game. Now, from a business standpoint, I just want the fans to think about this, and let's rationalize this as fans. DAZN is the ones that give the money to the promoter to promote these fights. Why would they internally let each promoter bid themselves up when they have to foot the bill? That doesn't make sense. That DAZN would be the guys to say, listen, you guys are all in-house. This is the one bid, and no one else will bid. Right? Like,
that's why there was only two bidders.
Exactly. So it's like, I don't understand where they even thought that, like, this would come in where people are, you know, and if you wanted more than $3 million, that assumes someone's going to bid over $12 billion, right? Because that would make 25%.
Yeah, right.
So you think somebody's going to come in and offer, what, $15 million for this fight? Like, the math ain't mathing, brother. I don't understand it. It's very disappointing because Keyshawn Davis is an amazing talent, but I was very disappointed, Dan. Like, are you disappointed? How do you feel about Keyshawn's career at this point, though? Like, his career?
I mean, it's hard to defend him. Like, I loved his performances his last couple times out. I love that he goes for the knockout. He's just visceral in there. He reminds me of Terrence Crawford in terms of, I'm not happy with a decision. I want to take it away from you. He did that against Jermaine Ortiz and some other fights too. Love this guy inside of the ring. But you have to question these outside of the ring decisions, and whether it's blowing the weight, whether it's what happened in Norfolk in his homecoming fight, getting into a brawl backstage with your brother's opponent after blowing the weight and ruining the entire event that was built around you. He had the run-in with the weed, whatever. I don't put much thought into that, but you have to throw it in there as well. Has mental health issues, not knocking him for that. But all these things start to add up, and you start to look at a fighter who's not reliable. And in boxing, you got to be reliable. You got to know that you're going to do your job. You got to know that you're going to make weight. You got to know that you're going to show up. You got to know that you're going to do media. You got to know that you're going to take fights when they come your way. Like, Top Rank has to be just beyond pissed when it comes to dealing with Keyshawn Davis. Because like I said in a little video I put out there, he's not exactly a household name. Like, he is clearly the B-side in his fight against Devin Haney. He's had a couple nice wins. He's got 15 pro fights. He hasn't fought at one. He's fought at 140 twice. He's never fought at 147. This was already a gift title shot from the WBO, and it's still $2 million. And on top of it, you turn down three. Like we see this a lot in boxing. Like we see these negotiations, and we don't know exactly what's going on behind closed doors. And we speculate. We choose sides as fans. It's part of being a fan. It's part of following the sport of boxing. But for this one, like, it's just so cut and dry, where it's like you just have to criticize them. Like we see the figures. It's a purse bid. Like purse bids are cut and dry. It's 75% to the champion, which is Devin Haney. 25% goes to the mandatory. And in this case, it was Keyshawn Davis. It didn't even have to go to purse bid. Like, I'm surprised. I couldn't believe that we were still having this purse bid when they delayed it a few days. I was like, all right, they're clearly going to come to an agreement. Like, you know, if he's probably, you know, get more than 2 million, like maybe three, a little bit more than three, and be happy. And let's pencil in a fight date, and let's get hyped for a big fight. But I just don't know. Like Jay Prince, like I can't believe it from him. Like, 'cause this guy has been around for a really long time, and he's made some good decisions, and he's guided a lot of careers in this sport. But this is a bad one. Like, there's no defending this move from Keyshawn Davis.
Like, not at all. I mean, I think Keyshawn owes his fans an apology, to be honest, because, again, let's put it in the context. Even before we got up until this purse bid moment, Keyshawn was making content, right? Like, he went to the Friday House Debo in California. Stuff.
Yeah, where he's
like,
that was great.
Like, yo, I, he's like, you know, Debo got knocked out by a brick. I got bricks in my hands. And he was doing all of the stuff. He's calling out Devin. He's doing lives. Like, everything building up to the moment, which I loved. Even regardless, win or lose, it's like, yo, you're building the fight. You believe in yourself. You believe you can beat this guy. And he made it clear that when I beat Devin Haney, I'm going to be the face of boxing. That's what he said. So for me, it's like, you got your fans. Everyone's riled up. Everyone's going for you. For you to pull a move like that, I understand rolling the dice, right? Like, I'm not against you rolling the dice. But if the dice doesn't roll in your favor, you don't leave the game, brother. You don't leave the game. You don't get up from the craps table because the dice didn't go your way. You got to sit that and you got to eat that. And you go in there and show them why you are worth the amount that you think that you are worth. I just feel like, listen, the guy, he owes an apology to a few people. I think the fans are one of them. And the other person to me is Shakur Stevenson. I think Shakur Stevenson made it clear, and a lot of people didn't like it. I was one of them. I thought Shakur should have took the fight when he had the chance at the 144 when people are talking. But he said, you know what? This is my brother, and I don't want to step on his toes. If he has the opportunity to go get the fight, let him go get the fight. So it's like, now, if you didn't take the fight, now Shakur might not be able to get the fight. It's like, dude, this is just – I just think it was a blunder, man. It was a big missed opportunity, and you don't know if opportunities like this are just going to come around often. You can't take it for granted that an opportunity like this is going to come knocking again. So that was a big missed opportunity, and I hope Keyshawn can rebound from this. It's definitely a career hit because he's an amazing talent, man.
Bro, another career hit. Like, how many career hits can you take? And he's not a kid. Like, what is he, 27? He's going on 28? He's not a kid.
Where do you think this puts his career? Like, do you think he can rebound from this? Is this something that this is a reboundable situation?
Yes, because he'll obviously he's going to get another fight. Like, I see people like, oh, have fun fighting Frank Martin in Norfolk for 300K. Like, there will be those types of opportunities. But who knows? Like, he's taking a calculated risk that maybe he signs with Zuffa. Maybe he fights out the rest of his top rank contract, and he goes to Zuffa, where the path of least resistance right now for the most amount of money. You got to think about that too. I also know how boxing contracts work, where if you become a world titleist, they can add more fights onto your contract, extensions. Yeah. Like, that's something you have to keep an eye on too. Like, I'm sure he has reasons for why he did this. I would love to hear them. I would love to know if it was his decision. Was it his team's decision? Like, we have Chris, obviously, he's the co-host of the show, and I've asked him numerous times, like, who ultimately makes the decisions on who you're going to fight next? And Chris always said, I do. The team works for me. I make my decision. They fall in line. Yes, they'll give me my brother, my trainer, my lawyer. We'll sit in a room, and they'll all say their piece. I want to know how this went down. I want to know what his thinking was. Like, the $5 million after expenses? Like, this is another thing we're adding to the lexicon now of boxing, netting. Like, what are we netting? Like, we're looking at paychecks? And that's wild to me. Like, your previous high was a million, and Top Rank was willing to go to three. 3 million's a pretty good number for a guy with 15 fights fighting a Devin Haney. It's not the biggest fight either. People were tweeting me saying, oh, look at it from Keyshawn's standpoint. If this fight generates $50 million in revenue and you're only getting $2 million of it, how is that fair to Keyshawn? First of all, this fight's not going to generate 50
million. Yeah, that's how newsflash. This ain't going to generate 50 million. That's not.
It won't even generate half of that, but it's still going to generate a pretty good number. But two is not the end, though. Like, I think there's got to be upside on the pay per view. There's got to be gate numbers. Like, there's ways I believe for Keyshawn to make some money on the back end. But this fight is not. It's not a huge fight. Like, the economics of boxing were in place here with the purse bid. Like, Haney getting six. Go ahead.
But I was going to say, Dan, look, even if it's not, even if you don't have the upside is winning the fight against Devin Haney. What more upside do you need? That all the money that you lost taking that risk, you would get multiple times over if you beat Devin Haney or even possibly stopped Devin Haney. Not that I'm saying it would be a stoppage, but I'm just saying Keyshawn's a guy that gets a lot of stoppages, and he's known for that, and he goes for that. So I'm just saying I just don't understand. I don't understand the thought process, you know, and I don't think you can blame the team. I think that you got to take this one on the chin. This is your career. This is your decision to be made. At the end of the day, you also campaigned for this fight. Your team petitioned for you to be the mandatory. You asked for this. This is what you asked for.
That's
and
wild.
Now you're here. And then you back out. Nah, man. I'm very disappointed.
Is he gonna speak?
I like Steve, but I'm disappointed, man.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to defend it. It's hard to rationalize it. It's hard to figure out why he would do that. I was excited. I mean, I was excited to pencil this into October or November. It's already a loaded schedule the last quarter of the year. It was all gearing towards that. I was like, all right, this is fun. This is a new, fresh matchup that I didn't even think was possible because I didn't really think of Keyshawn Davis as a welterweight. Definitely think he'd get into the ring with Haney. We get kind of, forced the hand a little bit with the purse bid. And that just blows up in our face as boxing fans. We can't have nice things. We can't do this. They're going to move on, too. There is no, like, going back to the drawing board or going back to the negotiation table because it's a purse bid. What you do is you move on to the next highest-ranked fighter. And I don't know if you saw this. As of today, like, Richard Hitchens just got – is the number three with the WBO at welterweight as of today.
Huh. I think there's a guy that's ahead of him. His name is Brian Norman Jr.
Yeah,
and he's asking for a rematch. I don't either, but he's asking for a rematch. And of course, I get why I don't want to see that. But I'm interested to see how the WBO handles this. Who will now enter that mandatory spot? I'm actually speaking to Gustavo Olivieri on Monday on my podcast, Cigar Talk. Nice. Make sure y'all check that out. So I want to get some clarity as to what's happening, who's coming up, and what that looks like for the WBO, man, because it seemed like Devin was with it. Hey, man, I got to buy into the Debo Haney now, Dan. I got to buy into the Debo.
I mean, you have
now,
to.
Man.
I mean, you might have problems with Haney, how he fights. You might have problems with how he handled the Ryan Garcia incident. But you got to respect how this guy will just be willing to fight anyone. He's reliable. He stays in shape. He stays out of trouble for the most part. He'll fight anyone. He's coming out looking great in all of this. He posted the Debo on the story, got a laugh out of me. I thought, this guy, I mean, you might not like Bill Haney, but the guy's just promoting his son. He's a promoter doing what everyone else has done for the last 100 years in this sport. Haney's coming out looking great. I don't know where Haney goes from here. That's up to the WBO if they want to go that route again. I'm curious what Gustavo will do because you're looking at it right now. You got Norman is number one. I put that at like 0%. Like, I don't see that happening again. For that. But then you have Hitchens at number three. You got Teofimo in there. You got Pacquiao. Did you catch that last night? They texted our guy.
Sean Gibbons.
Yeah, Woody from Toy Story. And he said, no. He didn't say no. He said, for the right price. So, Pacquiao's going to price himself right out of that fight. Hitchens is signed with Zuffa. So we have a whole freaking ball of yarn there. Barboza threw his hat to the mix. I'm not really keen on seeing Devin Haney versus Barboza. Catterall, I feel like, is he not with the WBO?
I like that fight. I like that Josh Catterall fight. I agree. I don't think that'll happen as far as the mandatory is concerned. I do like the Catterall fight, but another fight I like, Rohan Polanco, the Dominican. I like Rohan Polanco a lot. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Not in the WBO, but just in the ring rankings. Like, I wonder if Haney just gets out of the purse bid, gets out of the mandatory. I mean, he's going to sign with the zone, right?
I mean, that's what they're saying.
He could. The next part of this discussion is what's going on with Shakur Stevenson in this Devin Haney fight. Because now Shakur's beating the drum. He thinks now he's right back in. It's kind of weird. Like, it's like Shakur and Keyshawn are such good friends. And I feel like in this scenario, they like actually like conspired together or like figured out together what we're going to do. Because it was either Devin was going to fight Shakur or he was going to fight Keyshawn. I'm not saying that Shakur like blessed it and said, all right, Keyshawn, you can have this fight and all that. But it's all intertwined. And you have Shakur thinking he's going to fight Devin Haney. So then he goes and signs with Zuffa. I think he's on an island right now. I don't like that Shakur going with them. He says he can fight anyone and everyone out there. They can even on DAZN. I don't know about that. I think DAZN and Zuffa are in the middle of a war right now. So where does Devin Haney go from here? We got to figure that out. Where does Shakur Stevenson go from here? Because I got to say it right now. Does Shakur realize that he doesn't have any leverage anymore when it comes to a fight with Devin Haney? He's talking about the 144 stipulation that Haney loosely agreed to last month. But you have to understand, in boxing, that's last month. Things change on a day-to-day basis. I don't think that 144 is still out there. I don't think Shakur has any leverage at all. I think Shakur needs Haney more than Haney needs Shakur, because I believe that Haney will sign with DAZN, where all the fighters are right now and all the matchups are. Shakur is on an island by himself that is Zuffa right now. He can say, hey, I'll go fight in ring, I'll go fight on DAZN cards, but we have to see if that's actually going to happen for Shakur. So I don't think Shakur has any leverage. I want to see Shakur versus Devin Haney. We think we would get that with now everyone playing nice under the DAZN banner, but as we know in boxing, it just becomes obstacles. And now the Zuffa with Shakur is an obstacle in terms of fighting Devin Haney.
I totally agree, man. I definitely think that, you know, the Zuffa versus DAZN rivalry is going to make it tougher to get these fights. I do believe that the 144 was in play when it was, as Jay Prince put it, the double barrel shotgun was pointing at you, right? I think at that point, it made sense, right? It's like you either lose the belt and fight Keyshawn, or you can fight Shakur at 144. Now that that no longer exists, I do think that the 144 is no longer in play. I don't see this fight happening at 147 currently. So I don't know. I feel like both guys are going to have to move on, and we'll revisit this conversation in another 2 to 3 fights like we always do. I don't see it happening. But as far as Shakur's next opponent, that's a good question. Like I said, I had him on my live stream yesterday. He made it clear, I am not fighting Rayo Venezuela. Everybody keeps saying El Rayo. I'm not fighting him. It's not happening. He made that clear. Who is he going to fight? That's a great question, Dan. I'm not sure right now, like, what it'll look like. Who's it going to be? Is it Oshaki Foster? Pacquiao, who is looking for a payday. You know, maybe Zuffa will pay Manny Pacquiao to get in there. You know what I mean? I don't know, but I'm looking to see what option he has, because also Lamont Roach, who was a potential option, lost last night, and that's out now as well. So I'm not sure exactly where he goes from here.
I have to know what was in that contract. I said that right when he signed with Zuffa, Shakur. I said, man, when is Zuffa going to step in? Or when is Paramount Plus, the executives there, say, hey, we keep signing these big names. Why are they fighting on DAZN? Why are they fighting on Netflix? And look where Conor Benn versus Ryan Garcia ended up on Paramount. I don't know if they put their foot down or it was part of the deal, but I'm sure Paramount's like, we want to get a piece of this. Like, yeah, it's not the main driver. The main driver is UFC. I understand that boxing was kind of like a throw-in. But none of these companies are in the business of losing money. None of these companies are in the business of saying, oh, whatever. Go fight on Netflix. Go fight on DAZN. Like, there clearly is something brewing between DAZN and Paramount/Zuffa. And is Shakur now the person there that is in the middle of it? Is he going to suffer from this, or is he going to benefit from it? I think he benefited in the terms of making a boatload of money. And he said himself that DAZN came in late and offered the similar amount of money that Zuffa did too. I'm just curious, does when Shakur says, I can fight anyone under this deal, I can fight on DAZN, I can fight on ring cards, I can fight anyone. There are no roadblocks. But are there, though? Like, I don't 100% believe that, because we're seeing it. We're seeing lines drawn in the sand here. And he might have to fight a Rayo Venezuela on a Paramount Plus when it comes down to it. That's the problem with Shakur. I think he's on an island right now. And it sucks because I just want to see him fight the best. I'm so tired of all this stuff.
Listen, man, I do think that I do believe him, though. And the reason I say that is there's a guy by the name of Turki Alaşık, and he makes things move, right? Like, he is a guy that obviously has a percentage in the Zuffa business, is heavily invested in the Zuffa business, but he also has pull at the zone. So I think this guy, you know, at the old saying, this is America, baby, money talks, and they got the money. So I just feel like at some point, Zuffa and company is going to be able to throw enough money around to maneuver, whether that's throw it at fighters to come over, whether that's throw it at DAZN to give you a really large license fee to allow this fight to happen on our platform. We'll pay you a big license fee, DAZN. But I just think they have a war chest of money that they haven't really used yet. And I feel like in this sport, the person with the money generally makes the decision. So it's going to be interesting, though. I agree that, you know, Shakur right now is on an island, and right now it is unclear where things are going to go.
Yeah, we've seen this happen in the last 2 or 3 years where all of a sudden overnight fights are made, overnight hurdles are gone. Like, negotiations that we think would take years are done in days because of the money that Turki has to throw at this. And we'll see, because it's very intertwined. Because like you said, Turki, 60% of Zuffa is owned by Sela. And last I checked, 10% of the zone is owned by the PIF, the Public Interest Fund over in Saudi Arabia. So it's very, 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 very intertwined. But Shakur's got he's sitting on the island, but he's got a lot of money over there. And it's interesting because he's going after Haney again, and he's trying to tell him, but I don't think he understands, but he doesn't have that same leverage. Like, it's just clear. You could just see it. Like, Haney doesn't need Shakur right now. And Shakur did say, like, okay, like when someone said, you have no leverage, he replies, because he's Shakur and he's on Twitter, he replies to everybody, and says, yeah, maybe not, whatever. I do have leverage because, or let's just don't fight. I'm still going to make top dollar and we don't get to see that fight. Like, you can go that route, but that's not great because we want to see you in big fights, Shakur.
Yeah, I agree. I just think we're going to have to wait a couple of more fights until he feels like he's ready for 147. And respectfully, I mean, I do, you know, some people are saying that, listen, fight the guy at the weight that he's at. You know, we don't like catch weights and this and that. And, you know, I respect that. But at the same token, he did just move up, to be fair, his last fight, right? Like, he moved up. That was his first fight at 40. Yeah. I don't think it's commonplace in boxing where a guy that just moved up one fight, we're asking him to move up again at another weight class, right? So, I mean, I think he has the right to take his time. But conversely, Devin has the leverage. Devin's the champion. If he says, I'm only doing it at 47 now, he has the right to do so, and I respect it. So, unfortunately,
apparently Shakur doesn't care about the belts, though. Shakur doesn't care about the belts. He just said it yesterday. I'll fight a WBC champion, but the belt won't be on the line. Like, he's really dug in on that when it comes to the Zuffa. Some of the things that they're talking about, talking points, and what they believe in.
Yeah,
he gave up the WBC belt, vacated the WBC belt because he didn't want to pay the sanctioning fees. Like, it comes from the Crawford tree, the lineage.
Yeah.
It's they're all making the same decisions, they're all kind of moving the same ways. It just sucks. And like, but I will say that, like, so you don't think that Shakur should go to 147?
No, right now, no. If I was his management and team, no. I would say, like, we just went up to 40 for us to, like, take a you know, and again, Devin Haney's a great fighter. That is a risk. Like, let's be clear, that is a risk to go up there and fight Devin at his weight. He looked amazing against Brian Norman Jr. at 147. I think I would take a couple of more fights if I was Shakur to get acclimated and used to the weight. But again, the other fight that, you know, we've been mentioning as ad nauseum as boxing fans, which to me feels like there's a bit more reality to it now, Gervonta Tank Davis, man.
Once again,
all roads lead back to Tank. But why I'm saying this is
Tank versus who? Shakur?
Absolutely. The deal that we just saw that happened with PBC and DAZN, that means right now we're in a space where we don't know. The Amazon Prime thing didn't seem to work out how everybody thought it would or wanted it to. So right now, Tank is also, from what I gather, not a part of that deal. So Tank is right now sitting in a space where he's in limbo. Who knows? Maybe does he owe Amazon Prime another fight or two? Who knows? But I think that because Tank is in this limbo space, there's a guy named Dana White that's going to come crawling with a big bag of money attached to it and say, listen, I got a guy over here and I got some money. What do you want to do? I do feel like that fight feels more viable than it ever has. I don't think it'll happen next, but it does feel like something that can happen, and it doesn't feel like there are as many barriers as there once were.
Yeah, that's next year. So maybe like Shakur. This is when you're the best, though. When you're the best, when you're the numero uno, like Shakur wants to be. When you're in the top three, like they move the goalposts. They have unbelievable expectations for you. Go to 147. You know, you just fought at 140 against Teofimo and shut him out. So that's comes with the territory.
Do you think that did? Do you think he should go to 47 right now?
I understand that what Haney is doing. Like, I agreed to 144 last month, but things have changed. Like, things have changed in a big way in terms of the business of it. No, I don't think he should go to it right just yet. I understand. Oh, it's a few pounds. It's not a few pounds. Like, that's a big time difference. And yes, Haney's last fight was at 147, but his previous fight before that against Ramirez was at 144. So there are some grounds for why Haney did say yes initially, but it's all about leverage. It's all about the art of the deal.
That's right.
Interesting times for us boxing fans. One thing we can 100% agree on, Keyshawn, why'd you do that, man?
Why'd you do that? Dude, oh my God. That was the biggest fumble since the Seahawks not giving it to Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl of like the 1 yard line.
Unbelievable. I would like to hear what he has to say about it. I'd like to see where he goes next from here. I just want to see these guys fight. I want to see Haney fight. He hasn't fought this year. We're in August now. Come back to the drawing board. That's wild. Like, one of the biggest stars in the sport is potentially not going to lace them up this year. That's really it. That's all we got this week. Should be another interesting one next week. What do you got lined up? I know you got Cigar Talk coming up with some big guests.
Yeah, man. Cigar Talk coming up. Tomorrow, I have the WBO president, Gustavo Olivieri, on live. We're going to get all of these questions answered, man. What's happening in the WBO? Who is Devin fighting next? I mean, there's so much happening right now in the sport of boxing, and I'm just trying to get the news. So next is Gustavo. I also just interviewed Abdullah Mason. I'll be publishing that later this week as well. So, man, stay tuned.
Yeah, go follow Cigar Talk. Does a phenomenal job catching up with the biggest names in the sport. No internet issues. Slight internet issues, but you guys aren't going to see them. We're going to edit them out. Solid, solid run here. Going to have you on. When Chris decides to go on another vacation, because that's probably going to come soon. The guy likes his vacations. He deserves it. Chris will be back. We will be back. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the end of the summer. Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Say all those DMs. We're out.